part of this. I'm very excited. I took a look at everything, and I think this is a fascinating idea. There's so many Dans and Daniels and Danielles and Dannys, and oh man, we need to limit the name or you know, retire it or you know, pause it, let it have a cool down something. but you got a brilliant idea, so hey.
Oh, well, thanks, Dan. Yeah, it was, you know, you start realizing, well, there's, you know, Danny for short, D-A-N-I, and then, of course, guys named Danny with the Y. I thought, well, shoot, let's just explore the whole Daniverse.
Hey, and it's brilliant. There's so many. I think you finally hit it. One time, it's been several years ago. But I'm still friends with a few of these people on social media. But I want to say maybe right before COVID, I got added to a massive group chat on Facebook that was nothing except other people named Dan Williams, which is a little bit more specific than what you've got going here. But I'm just assuming there's got to be all these other group chats out there. You know, it's like, all right.
Trust me, it has crossed my mind, and I've done some light research on other Dan McArdles in the world, which there are a few. So I have scratched the surface. I've seen a few out there, and I've thought, well, let's not just... When I stick to creative types, you know, you get people that are maybe a little animated. They have a story to tell, maybe something to promote. So not every Dan is a perfect candidate.
Well, I dream of a world where all Dans have a pursuit that they are just enamored with and fueled by. I would love it. But to your point, yeah, it's not everybody out here in the grind, because the grind sucks. So, or it has its moments.
Well, Dan, it's great to officially welcome you to the Dan Time Podcast. Thank you so much for carving out some time in your busy schedule.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
I found your Facebook page, which led me to Lindy Urban, and which led me to Ghost River Revival. And I didn't know until just a little while ago that you're also an English instructor. Is that correct?
That is, yeah. That's where I met our mutual acquaintance. Well, you know, going to college to become one. But yeah, I teach at a small community college in Northwest Alabama. I'm very fortunate. I love it. And obviously I love music as well. We like to joke that there's much easier ways to go broke. So you have to love it. yeah, it's good times all around.
Well, for maybe it was a year. It was my second grade year, and a little bit into the following summer, I lived in Florence, Alabama. So not too far from Muscle Shoals.
Oh, no. That is, man, the Quad Cities are one city that they've not made peace with it yet. Muscle Shoals, Tuscumbia, Florence, and Sheffield like to pretend they're four different towns. But if you look at the population of those four towns, you got one decent size metro area. They just need to go ahead and unite and call it a day. Although, with you being in Florence, across the river and, you know, folks around here do not love to cross that river for some reason.
Yeah, I remember that I knew Sheffield was there. I don't think we went over to Sheffield very often. Does everybody kind of hang out in their little pocket areas?
Really, yeah. It's a weird little town. The whole thing is kind of strange. So, you know, there's Muscle Shoals, which, with you having lived in Florence, you're at least familiar with the area, but for anybody listening that's not, the city, you know, it's a little famous. You know, it's had a rich history for recordings that have been made there. And that being said, its big selling point over the past few years, you know, we've still had people like Steven Tyler coming in. We've had, you know, a number of celebrities that have, you know, that still come to the Shoals and record. But one of the primary reasons for that is that it's a small town, and it's, you know, there's not a whole terrible lot to do there. Muscle Shoals, you know, it's only 100 years old. We recently celebrated the centennial of the town. So it doesn't even have a downtown area, right? A lot of towns that formed after automobiles started to become at least more common, or really any kind of transportation started to become more common. A lot of those towns don't have downtown centers because there was not that pressure to have this one central spot. So Muscle Shoals is strange. And then, like you're saying, Sheffield, you know, it does have a small downtown, but there's not really a whole lot going on there a lot of times. And the same thing with Tuscumbia. So, yeah, it takes all three of them combined to make really one functional area. It's really strange.
Dan, I think people, of course, if you listen to rock and roll and you like classic rock, wherever you live around the country, around the world, maybe people are familiar with that line. Muscle Shoals has got the Swampers.
Oh, absolutely.
Sweet Home Alabama.
Oh, yeah, man. And part of the reason for that line is that Skinner famously recorded quite a bit in Muscle Shoals, especially towards the beginning of their career. Their album, and somebody would probably need to fact check me on this, but I do a bit of work for the local music museum, so that's more of a passion thing. But, you know, I tend to know a little bit about the stuff. But Skinner, their album, Skinner's First and Last, that was released after the plane crash, it largely was going to be their first major release. However, you know, for reasons I'm actually not sure of at this moment, it ended up, those tapes ended up getting shelved. But posthumously, that record was released, and it was because, yeah, Skinner had recorded an entire album of material in Muscle Shoals, and it's out there now. It's Skinner's First and Last. So, yeah, it's just this little corner of the world. It's really, really rich in musical history. So much, Aretha Franklin recorded here, great bit, Etta James, of course, the Stones song, Wild Horses, was written and recorded here. To be such a small area and to have such a small population, it's really kind of astounding how much has come from the area over the years.
And like you said, some of those big name artists, Steven Tyler, Mick Jagger, Aretha Franklin, probably when they're in the heat or the peak of their careers, it's nice to just get out of that limelight and the crowds and the adulation, and you can't walk into a convenience store or grocery store, or just to go to a small town and not have so many distractions.
And that was, you know, from what people have said over the years, from what I've been told over the years, because, you know, a lot of the Swampers, I was very lucky and you know, mostly by the time I started working in music in the area, mostly they were still alive, and I was very fortunate to get to talk and work and learn from, you know, many of them. And that was the thing that they very often did come back to, was that one of the things that really made the area special was, yeah, these massive artists that were nationally and internationally famous, they could come here and they could work. And like you said, they could pop down to the corner store and not get hassled. They could go out and eat, and you know, there's a good chance nobody would even recognize them, things like that. And yeah, it's so all that to come together and say, it's strange that the area has had such a rich musical history whenever you consider that it's a tiny town, right? I, off the top of my head, I want to say it might be 80 or 90,000 people in the metro area for that city. It's not large by any means, but yeah, it's fantastic, especially if you like to work in music.
Well, I want to call out some acclaim, or whatever how you would describe it here. Grant Walden, the producer, engineer, produced the latest singles from Ghost River Revival, Medicine Woman, and Secrets. Dan, he said about you that Dan Williams is one of the best bassists in the biz. He's basically a unicorn, which to me, that's one of the best compliments you could get.
Well, Grant is very kind. He's one of my favorite people. We've actually, he and I have known each other since we were in middle school. And it's, you know, neither of us are natively from the Shoals area. We're actually from, you know, about 40 miles out of the area, extraordinarily rural area. The town we came from, you know, not even incorporated, that sort of thing. So it was really strange that we both ended up in music and both ended up in Muscle Shoals. So I've had a long time to know and love Grant. And he is a very kind person with that compliment. I'll take it. I'll be gracious with it. But he's very kind. I will say it's nice. He does hire me a good bit to do some, to come in and do studio work. So, you know, he must believe that at least on some level, or he wouldn't keep having clients pay me.
Right.
It's sometimes it's hard to take compliments, you know.
Well, Dan,
imposter syndrome is a real thing.
I'm really impressed with the music. I mean, two singles with two different songwriters released in with about a week of each other, March 28th. The latest single from Lindy Urban, April Rain, released, and then about a week prior, Medicine Woman from Ghost River Revival. I got to say, Dan, I love both of these songs, but man, when April Rain kicks in, and if you appreciate music and you especially like the rhythm section, I was driving around and I thought, okay, it is time for the bottom end. Here we go. It's just I love your bass sound on April Rain. And how you guys just kind of sit in that groove. And I think there's in that song where, you know, maybe another songwriter might be 3.5 minutes, 3:45, let's wrap this thing up. It sounds like the song is kind of drawing to a close. And then, oh, wait a second, we're going to ride this out a little longer. That I love that, Dan.
It was a joy. It was a joy to work on that. Lindy is phenomenally talented. She's and so young. She's only 17. It's absurd that she's as talented as she is, especially at that age. And you know, one of the other reasons that session was a joy, the people involved in working on that. You know, we used a couple of different drummers, but both of them were extremely accomplished people. You know, they both worked at several studios in the area throughout the years. One of the key players, one of the guys that was in there playing piano, the man by the name of Mark Narmar, who, if you listened to country music anytime, you know, between the late 80s and the mid 2000s, you heard some of his songs. He had multiple number one hits that he wrote. So he's fantastically talented. The other guy, the guy that was on organ, is a fellow by the name of Spooner Oldham, who is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'll be honest with you, I was terrified for most of those sessions, even though I've played with, you know, these people before, and I've recorded with these people before, but it's always, you can only walk into a studio and be ready to get to work and have, you know, a couple of the older guys in there talking about how they worked with, I think the last time I walked in into a moment like that, Spooner was talking about a party he had gone to at Liberace's house way back in the day. And then, you know, there was another event we were going to do with Spooner, and he unfortunately was unable to do that because he's been playing with Neil Young for years and years and years and years. And he got the phone call to come up and play some shows with him. So I said, well, sorry, I got to get on a plane and go do this. And I was just thinking, yeah, nobody here pulls rank on that guy. So, you know, it's easy to sound, it's easy to be in the groove and to sound good whenever you're fortunate enough to be playing with people like that, people that are working at that caliber.
Yeah. And
but I appreciate the compliments. I was very thrilled with how that turned out.
Oh, it gels beautifully. And Lindy's vocals, she goes low, but she seems to finish high. Some of these outros on her those three singles, April Rain, Darkness Follows, and Ain't Bound Now. I think she usually has kind of a high outro, but she has a, I was surprised she said that she's 17. She's got a very seasoned voice and style. It seems like she's been doing this for a while.
You would think so, but it's one of those situations. She has been playing music since she was 12, but she's only started performing in the past year and a half or so. She's really, really just getting started. I don't use the term lightly, but I think Prodigy might be applicable here, because it's amazing watching her learn and grow, because there's things that I've seen more seasoned players take some time to learn how to do. I've witnessed her watch one of these guys do it once or twice and then just go do it. It's just like something in her head. It's like, oh yeah, obviously this is exactly how you do this thing that has taken some people years to master. She just learns so quickly. It's fantastic. I truly think she's got a wonderful, wonderful career in front of her.
When I was listening to Darkness Follows, released at the end of February, it's a pretty heavy song too, and it reminded me that I had a letter. It was like several pages long, from a long time ago, maybe 15 or 20 years ago, that I wrote to a former love interest, and I never mailed it, I never hand delivered it, I kept it, and it's in my storage unit. But she's laying it all out there, and this is so relatable. Kind of sounds like, hey, listen, you still have a place in my heart. I'm still there for you. It kind of sounds like some negative energy that she's just chosen. I can't be around this. I wanted more, but this is not helping me to be with you. So I just love the song. I love her courage in her songwriting here.
Well, I think she'd be very thrilled to hear that. I'm pretty sure negative energy might have been exactly some of the phrasing she used when she was talking to me about how the song was written and being developed and coming along, and telling me the story behind it. I think she'd be thrilled to hear that you find it to be so relatable. That's not always the case. Sometimes you create something and you put it out in the world, and whatever people take and do with it, that's how they understand it. That's how they understand the art, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that. It's nice to make something that a person finds meaningful, no matter exactly how they interpret it. But I based off the stories she's told me and what she said, it feels like you honed right into the heart of it. And I'll pass it along. I think she'll be thrilled to hear that.
It is
a very relatable song, which, it's tragic in itself that it's so relatable to so many people, but it absolutely is. And that song surprised all of us as well, because, I know you've interviewed a lot of people that work in music. You never know what to expect when a song releases or anything like that. And especially if this is a small project, she's young, and we're some of us that have been around a little bit longer are trying to help her out in a number of ways. But even then, you can't, unless you're one of the major players, you can't really control how something like this is going to go. And that song released, and a couple of mornings later, I got this real excited text message from her. It was a screenshot of a playlist that had been added to on Spotify, and I thought, yeah, right, there's no way. But I went and I looked, and yeah, the official account of Joe Bonamassa had added that song to one of his playlists that's publicly facing on his Spotify page. And I've been feeling pretty good about that for about a month now, I'm not gonna lie. But yeah, there's no predicting what's gonna happen. All you can do is do your best to make something that people will enjoy and hope that people find it and resonate. And I'm thrilled to hear that you're enjoying the music. That's the highest compliment that you can pay anybody, I think, that that the creative is that, hey, I found this thing and I really appreciate it.
Yes, and I do like on occasion, you know, it doesn't have to be every song, but I like when a song like this, it doesn't clock in and clock out at, you know, 3 minutes and 12 seconds. This one goes on. You can let it kind of wash over you. You just kind of get lost in the song. And I wanted to ask, when she comes into the studio, have you guys already seen the lyrics and you're maybe guiding her and saying, well, why don't we try this? And you come up with a certain sequence or a rhythm section. How does it go with a song like this? Do you give her some recommendations, or does she say, this is what I would like for it to sound like?
It's a little of column A, a little of column B. So what happens like this, and it's a little bit of a different situation because I'm after the first studio session, I've been playing with Lindy a bit more. We musically, we clicked pretty well. And for all the jokes about bass players, it's hard to find a bass player that is, I don't want to say reliable. That's not the right word, but it's hard to find one that grooves the way you want them to. And so I've been very fortunate that I've picked up, you know, that opportunity from that. But the way a recording session like that often works is the songwriter, in this case, Lindy, will have, you know, made a recording of the song on very often on her phone. I think hers was on her phone. So, you know, we cut five songs that weekend, and she had recorded those five. And she sent those files to one of the guys on the session, Mark, and he wrote out a chart. He uses a style that's called the Nashville Number System. And if you took any music in high school at all, then it probably looks real familiar to you because it's really based around scale degrees. But it's a way to communicate how a song is constructed and the chord movements and things like that, without necessarily having people that know how to read music. Because, you know, a lot of pop musicians don't read. So, yeah, what will happen is somebody will, very often it's, here's the song, it's been recorded, send the work tape to somebody in the session. They'll make charts for everybody. And, you know, what we did is we went in the studio, we listened to those demo tapes a couple of times, made notes, asked questions. The whole thing took about 10 minutes. And then you just go out on the floor and you do it. You know, one of those songs, I think it might have been April Rain. I want to say that took us about 2.5 hours to get a take we were happy with. But the flip side to that is that the first song that released, Ain't Bound Now, I think we had a keeper take of that within 30 minutes. And, you know, yeah, it's just, you learn to read chart and you kind of have an idea. If you've been doing this long enough, you have an idea of what your instrument's role in a song is. And yeah, you ask the artist what they want. And sometimes they have real specific requests. There was a bass run in one of these songs. And we recorded these back in August, so my memory's a little foggy at this point. There was one of those songs where Lindy did have a specific request, but the rest of the time it was, we do a thing, hey, do you like this, yes or no? And if it's no, we go back to the drawing board, and if it's yes, we keep it. And, yeah, it's a little bit different everywhere, you know. There's some much busier music towns where it's, you go in and, you know, if it's taking you more than 30 minutes to cut a song, you may not be getting paid. Mm-hmm. But it's, for the most part, no, it's just, you hear the song that the artist sends, the demo they send, and you listen and you cut it. But it is very different from a situation like, with like the other act you mentioned, Ghost River Revival. That is a band that is pretty well rehearsed, and it's a collaborative effort as opposed to, you know, one or two people that are creating the things and then everybody's showing up at the studio to learn it, you know, there and do it. That band had an opportunity a couple of weeks ago to go to a studio up in Nashville that their thing is recording to analog tape. The studio is called Welcome to 79, and they do things there like how the industry, how recording worked at the, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, things like that, before things started to become digital, which means that there's really no takebacks, right? Punch-ins are much more rare. You know, if you make a mistake, you got to really sit there and think, okay, how significant was this mistake? Is it enough to make the whole band come in here and do this again? But the reason I bring that up is that process I just talked about with Lindy is very different because Ghost River, we went in and a song that I wouldn't necessarily say it's complicated, but it's got a lot of moving pieces. We got to keep or take for it the second time. Just the first time we ran it, said we like it, we probably got a better one in us, ran it again and said, okay, that's it. We'll go do some overdubs later. But that's the track. So yeah, it depends on, are we talking about a situation where the artist is hiring musicians, or are we talking about a situation where it's a total band unit? And again, you know, Ghost River is made up of a lot of people that are studio musicians in the area. So it's, I don't want to say unfair to say, yeah, the second attempt was successful, and that's actually pretty common. We did another song that weekend that was complicated, and we caught it on the third try. But it's just the difference between having people that are seasoned and rehearsed together, and then having people that are, you know, coming in to hear a song for maybe the first or second time and, you know, creating their part on the spot based off charts and then recording that together. Naturally, that second one is probably going to take a little bit longer, you know, because you're coming up with everything there on the spot. But, you know, not one not being better or worse. They're just different ways of doing things.
And Dan, some of these these other musicians that you work with or that appear on Lindy's songs, like Tanisha Hodge, backing vocals, Michael Dillon, drums. Are some of these players people that you've worked with on other projects that you've known for a long time?
So, it's funny, the two people that you mentioned, it was the first time I ever worked with either one of them. But they're old pros, man, and I don't mean older than their age. I mean, they've been doing it for a long time. And, you know, actually watching both of them work was, I felt like I learned a lot from the two of them, because they just, you know, they came in and they just did what they were supposed to do and nailed it, you know, right off the bat, right out of the gate on the first shot. It was simultaneously humbling and empowering, you know, just to see, it's nice to see people that are really good at what they do, doing their thing. You know, there's just something wonderful about seeing whatever somebody's good at, watching them get up there and do it. And I don't know, that feels like it feeds me